The Magic Mike Show, where you hear the experts speak. The Magic Mike Show. Tune into the show every week. The Magic Mike Show. You can trust the show is the bomb, because it's being brought to you by RacingDunes.com.
What's up, everybody? I'm Magic.
And I'm Mike.
And this is the Magic Mike Show, episode 539. Mr. Samich.
Big old Keelan's back. Huzzah!
Woo! We're excited about it. I've been looking forward to this show all week. I'm excited that Keelan is back. And I was talking to Aaron about this earlier, Mike. Maybe it's just me. It seems like Keelan is just a little bit more exciting this year than in recent years past. I don't know what it is, but I personally am just that much more excited about Keelan, specifically the spring meet this year.
I love Keelan. I love the Keelan spring meet because it feels like Del Mar and Saratoga in a way, where it's this boutique meet where you get a bunch of horses converging together. It kind of sets up the Kentucky Derby as well. But you get these cards, like our card we're going to cover here for the Saturday, where it's five graded stakes. You get a bunch of good horses. But the unique thing about Keelan is it's not these five horse fields, these six horse fields. You get big fields, which means that you end up with 30 to ones that you like in certain races. And there are some shots that you can take here. And man, this is one of those where I'm taking a couple shots. My ticket's $72. If it hits, I would say the minimum payout for my ticket's $5,000, somewhere in that range, just because of how it's structured and some of the prices along the way. So excited to talk about this sequence, excited to get it going, excited to have Keelan back. Like, I can't wait to have on the feed tomorrow. And you know, just it's one of those tracks where I've had wild success and wild failures. It's every meet seems to be very individualized, but hopefully it's a good one. And just excited to have really good racing back. Like this last Gulfstream meet left me a little bit to be desired in the Champions meet. It just didn't have that same feel. It didn't feel like the same horses were there. It feels like you're getting these horses at Keeneland.
Yeah, the Keeneland is, as you mentioned, it's like Saratoga, but a truncated version. We're only running for a couple of weeks. And everybody's targeting Keeneland. Chad Brown targets it, Todd Pletcher, Brad Cox. You've got people shipping from all over the country converging, like you said, here at Keeneland. And a fun all graded stakes sequence here that we're going to be covering. Now, it is races 6 through 10. The last five races are 7 through 11. I'm not going to go on my rant about how dumb I think it is to make the late pick 5 not end in the last race of the day. But you've seen that before. Quick question before we get going. I remember last year at Keeneland, the Turf Paradise to Keeneland move for both dirt and turf was like money. Do you think we get that again this year?
I definitely upgraded Turf Paradise or Turf Paradise horses, Turfway Park horses, and Volterra horses actually had a nice run 2 years ago. So it seems like there's always this one random track, and it's not necessarily in the high end races, but it's like the $20,000, $30,000 claimers. And they're jumping up from like 12.5 claimers at these smaller tracks. You're like, no way this horse competes. And then they totally compete. Those horses have been interesting the last couple of years at Keeneland. It's like Saratoga and Del Mar again, where people are clearly targeting this meet and they're trying to make sure that their horse, the first time they go out at this meet, is the best version of their horse that they could possibly be because they want to win at Keeneland. So definitely have to pay attention to some of the smaller tracks when they ship in.
Well, I'm excited. Mike's excited. We hope you're excited for Keeneland's late pick 5 races 6 through 10, all graded stakes on Saturday, April 6th. It's Bluegrass Stakes Day. Let's get into it, buddy. Riders up! All right, Mike, here we go. Kicking off the late pick 5 at Keeneland on Saturday, April 6th. Race 6, it's the Grade 3 Commonwealth for 9 older males sprinting that tricky, tricky 7 furlongs on the dirt. Where'd you go on top?
Man, I definitely disagreed with the morning line spot here. I handicapped this 2 days ago without the morning line, which I like doing. I think it's a good exercise to kind of see where you land. I was nowhere near Minnesota Ready or Raise Kane. We'll put it that way. Give me the 2 Wilco on top here in this spot. It's a horse that Wesley Ward's sending out second time. This is a horse coming in off Turf Paradise. You go back to that Keeneland race, 3 back. Fits perfectly here, going 7 furlongs. Is able to stalk, pounce, and win. It's the only try over Keeneland's dirt. Twice run at this distance over the dirt. 1 for 2 with a second place finish as well. That other one actually was over synthetic, but still a solid second place finish in that. So we know likes the distance. Like this second off a layoff, and I talked about trainers that aim for Keeneland. Well, there is no trainer that aims more for Keeneland than Wesley Ward. IRAD gets the mount here. The pace should set up well. I think, like, for instance, Minnesota Ready on the outside going to definitely be part of the pace. Are we sure Minnesota really wants seven furlongs? Like, is that the wheelhouse here, or is he just going to go, and we'll see what happens? To me, this is a good spot here for the two Wilco, so I'm going to put Wilco on top.
I did not put him on top, but I agree with you on the number two, Wilco. It's weird, too, that it's a grade three race on dirt. He's only ever made two starts on dirt because he's Irish bred. He's by no name never. But Unbridled Songmare underneath gives him some dirt pedigree in the two races he's had. Yeah, the seven furlong victory here over this exact course by almost five lengths. This is Allowance Company, but this is a grade three race. Allowance races at Keeneland might as well be, that's like a grade two. It's going to need a park. And then Churchill Downs, the one turn mile, just right at the end, got a little bit tired. Got passed by Dennington, but was almost three lengths clear of third in that race. So I agree with you on him here. The top choice for me, and I know you don't like him, and I don't like that I feel like I'm using him, and it's just, I'm like, doing this. It's the number four, Raise Cane.
No, don't do it.
The race two back over this exact course and distance fought very well over Dr. Venkman to get the win in the Perryville Stakes. It was a really hard-fought effort. I was very impressed with what he was able to do. He likes to come from off the pace. It's a big field. Right? Nine horses entered in here. I assume there's a lot of cheap speed that we're going to see. I know you like one of the speed horses, but there is definitely some cheap speed in here. If the two gets tired, starts to fade a little bit, the four you know is going to come running. And just like he did then, he beat a horse, by the way, in the Perryville Stakes named Post Time, who's my favorite horse, in training right now, targeting the Grade 2 Carter on Saturday. So, I'm all for Raise Cane in this spot on top. I don't love it, but he does very well at Keeneland. Don't forget, he broke his maiden here going seven furlongs as well in the past. So I think that he's one of those seven furlong specialists, kind of like we talked about with Wilco, where it's like, this is right in his wheelhouse there. And I'm getting Luis Saez back aboard, who was aboard for that victory in the Perryville Stakes. So, yeah. Oh, I don't get raised. Oh, I thought I got free chicken from Raise Cane's. Damn it. JD's telling me I'm not getting my free chicken now.
If you did get some free chicken, then I would be a little bit more interested because they do have phenomenal chicken there at Raise Cane. Man, the race three back is the one you point to, right? Or two back, the one to point to at the seven for long at Keeneland. If you're going to say that Raise Cane deserves to be the favorite in this spot, problem for me is there's really nothing else on the page that makes me think he can win this race. It's just that one effort. Now it's over the track at the distance, which is why I think you're going to see why you're picking him on top and why I think people are going to bet on him. But at this price in a field that I think is actually pretty competitive, I just couldn't get there with him, especially the fact that he's going to be closing from the clouds as well. I just, not for me when I knew I was going to have to pay a short price with him.
You went two deep here. I went three deep. So I'll talk about the other one I have here. It's the number seven, Hear My Song, Hear Me Song. My Song? I'm not sure I think it's supposed to be Hear My Song, but it's spelled worthy. Anyways, this horse is actually the defending champion. Another one that likes to come from off the pace. Another one that likes this set of distance. Won the Grade 3 Commonwealth, came out of it, and went to the Grade 1 Churchill Downs, where he ran into a horse named Cody's Wish. Okay, we'll forgive him losing that race. Then went back to Ellis Park, 6.5 furlongs, about the same. Won the Jeff Hall Memorial Stakes. He likes the track. Another one that likes the track, likes the distance. He's coming second off of the layoff. He's exiting a 6-furlong race at Turfway Park, the Big Daddy Stakes. Fun name for that. This is not a big barn. This is the big dog in the barn, and he's back here to defend the title. Not getting 11-1 like he was last year. He is going to be 9-2, and I think we can probably get just about every bit of that. I'm guessing he goes off about 5-1 here. So I did use the seven here, My Song, but I also understand if you're going to pass on him because of the wedding funeral situation.
Yeah, I mean, the price is a little short for me. The weight break is nice here. Hasn't carried 118 since winning this race last year, so that's definitely a positive for him. The connections is why you're not going to see this horse bet off the board, right? Like you said, very small barn. They have had success at Keeneland. The horse is 2-for-4 at Keeneland with 2 seconds, so always been in the exact at Keeneland. I respect the seven more than I do the four, especially because the price. Look, you're getting close to double the price on Hear My Song as you are to Raise Cane, so I don't hate the look on the seven there. Track blowing up for my horse, though. Give me the six horse. Bo Cruz is the other horse I'm going to use, 12-1 on the morning line. You mentioned I'm using one of the speed horses. I kind of disagree with you on that. I don't think Bo Cruz is necessarily one of the speed horses. I think he has speed. But if you look at the races he's been running, which are all, you know, two-turn races for the most part, mile 16th, mile and an eighth, he's been in the front in those races. But when you look at the sprint, his maiden effort, his first effort there, going 6 furlongs, was about 5 lengths behind a 46 4.5 and came closing late. I think you're going to see a more mature horse here since this is not the first race. This is the second off of a layoff into the four-year-old season, so a logical point for improvement. You pick up Jose Ortiz, and this is the horse that has tactical speed and has the stamina to be able to hold on for that 7 furlongs. I think the trip sets up perfectly for Bo Cruz to be able to stalk and make first run at the leaders and have that enough left in the tank, considering we've been going longer distances, to be able to overhaul the rest. And I love the fact that Ortiz picks up the mount. To me, that was a big as well. The fact that, you know, and you have Torres, you've got Rosario, you've got Lanry, you've got some bigger jockeys that have ridden this horse before, but now you're getting Ortiz pick it up for stall. To me, that's a pretty good sign. They're 1-for-3 when they combine over 2 years. So not a common jockey trainer setup here. But the fact that Ortiz picks him up, it's second off the layoff. I think you've got tactical speed. I thought the first race off the layoff was very good. Ended up running a very close third, basically a three-way photo. Ended up third in that one. Now we're cutting back in distance, stepping up in class. It tells me that they think Bo Cruz is doing very well right now to put him into this spot. I think Bo Cruz runs a big one. So for me, I'm just going 2-6, and we'll get through here with a 12-1 winner.
Yeah, I would prefer if the 2-1 because we would both get through it. But I'm with Michael Olson. I did consider Bo Cruz in here for all the reasons you mentioned, and he's the first one that I took off in this spot. You could go a lot of different ways in this race. I see some people in the chat earlier were talking about Manuwa. Chris Mallow asking, Manuwa is still running? He is. And actually, if he finishes, I think anywhere really in this race, he's going to become a millionaire. He's earned $990,000 so far in his career, which is pretty awesome. But, you know, Michael Olson brought up trying to attend Manuwa's first wedding after the engagement party. Speaking of weddings, this horse at this point, I don't think he's ever going to be anything more than a bridesmaid. He gives a good effort. I just don't see, you got to go all the way back to the grade two Phoenix in 2022 when he had his last victory. He's a great horse. He's a fun story. You know, like I said, he's about to become a millionaire after this race. I just don't see anything past the exotics for him.
Yeah, to me, this is a horse that runs third or fourth. And Manuwa is at his best when it's just a murderous setup up front, and you have a collapse style horse, and that's what Manuwa can do to pick up those pieces. I don't see it setting up that well for Manuwa here to be able to pick up the pieces. I mean, I'm not so sure this is like a burner pace. Like we've talked about the 2, the 3, the 4, the 6, and the 7. None of them are horses that go, right? That just blatantly go. So it's you're left with the 1, the 5, the 8, and the 9 that have to set the pace if it's going to be a blistering pace. And when you go through them, like, I think the 1's forwardly placed, but he's not necessarily a burner. You go to the 5, he probably is going to go. He's probably your cheapest speed. The 8's going to close, and the 9, like, usually doesn't make the lead going these type of distances. So I don't think we have a very fast pace, which makes it harder for me to get behind horses like Manuwa and Raise Cane.
Makes sense, especially if you're looking at it from that pace perspective. It definitely makes sense. Second leg of the Keeneland. Oh, by the way, let's talk about him real quick. Neither of us used your morning line favorite 5-2, the 9 Minnesota Ready. For me, Mike, I think this is a gross overreaction. He had a really nice win in his first start for new trainer Tom Amos last time out, but it was on the dirt in the Colonel Power Stakes, which was meant for the turf at Fairgrounds. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just Mike, a tremendous turf sprinter, was second. That tells me he just beat a bunch of turf horses, and he is coming well out of that element here.
Yeah, to me, this is just, like you said, a gross overreaction to an off-the-dirt race. Scratched down to 7 horses. I think there were originally 12 in that. He looked really good. The 102 buyer is kind of BS. I don't think that this horse deserved a 102 buyer in that spot, but you have that number just, it's like eye-popping here on the page in the last race. Also, not sure that 7 furlongs is necessarily the best distance here, specifically over the dirt. Like, there's a lot to dislike about Minnesota Ready. And I should at least mention the 1 Frat Pack. This was the first horse, or the last horse off my ticket, and he's 30-1 in this spot. So you mentioned he's good over the sloppy track. Like, the connections here are the reason why. Like, if this horse was still in the Brown Barn, what's the odds? 5-1 instead of 30-1? Like, yeah. It's a drastic difference. And you know, you look at the race 3 back at Saratoga going 6.5 furlongs. That's good enough to compete if he steps forward from the 4 to 5 year old season. You're getting second off the layoff now. Yeah, the connection's not nearly as good, but this horse is running at some pretty darn good horses in his career. And 30-1, I think, is a ridiculous price on the 1-horse Frat Pack.
I'm going to push back slightly. I wouldn't say the connections are not that good. They're not that well known yet, but that's because Whit Beckman is waiting for Honor Marie to win the Kentucky Derby.
There you go.
On the first Saturday of May. We'll move on. Second leg of the late pick 5 at Keeneland. Saturday, April 6th, race number 7. This is the grade 2 Appalachian Stakes 12 3-year-old fillies routing a mile on the turf. You could make a case for just about anybody in here. I think that's why I went five deep. Where'd you go on top?
Give me the nine. Buchu on top here. Look, her coming out party was a Jessamine. She looked phenomenal breaking from the 10 post that race, two back over this turf course, going a mile in a 16th. She absolutely mowed them down off what was a pretty rough trip. Four wide on the first turn, six wide on the second turn, but still was able to win by three lengths. That was a pretty darn good race too, if I remember correctly, like going through the past performances there. Now gets back to a turf she likes. This is going to be the seasonal debut, so the big question off the layoff, but you look at Bauer stats, 31% off this layoff. That's pretty darn good. Also places horses very well in graded stakes. He's 4 for 12 in graded stakes with a $3.30 ROI as well. I think Buchu runs a big one here. And I think you get a pretty decent price because of the layoff. Did you use the nine?
Top pick for me as well. Yeah, I have a bunch of price horses that I use with her, but for all the reasons you outlined, I got to put her on the ticket. Phil Bauer, the trainer, is 5 for 12 at Keeneland in the last year. That's pretty darn good. 29% with Martin Garcia riding. He was aboard for those two turf route wins and then in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Phillies turf. The question is the layoff, but you had a 48-1 bullet and then a 47-1 four furlong works there on the page. So she should be primed and ready to go. You'll know until they run them, but definitely a good horse to have on the ticket here. We're going to have a lot of agreement here. Let's see, we've got three horses we agreed with and you went four deep. So let's talk about the number six, Austere, is the second one, 10-1 on the morning line. And boy, you know, I love these connections, Brendan Walls, Tyler Gaffalione. It's usually hard for me to pass up the two of them running together. She's second off the layoff, which I think is a great way to play her as well. Second off for Brendan Walsh, an angle that I love to use. First two starts, Austere won, including a $500,000 stakes at Kentucky Downs, fifth in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Phillies turf. So she was running well, just like Buchu was in that race. Last time out on the page, it's fifth in the Florida Oaks. But if you remember that day, Mike, nobody could close on that damn turf course. You had Wakeshu, the winner, on your ticket, and she won by a length. After that, it was kind of a blanket finish for a bunch of horses. She was able to rally a bit and to close the gap. She was 6.5 lengths back at one point, ends up coming to less than 2 at the wire there. So she got going late. I think second off the layoff is going to be right in her wheelhouse.
Yeah, I agree with you. Austere was my third pick in this race. I think the 10-1 price is ridiculous. I thought she was going to be the third choice, second choice in here. I was surprised when I saw 10-1 on the morning line. I'll see what she actually goes off at. You hit the nail on the head. Look, this was a highly thought of filly winning her first race, then comes back, runs a much better number second time out there at Kentucky Downs, able to get the win, goes to the Breeders' Cup, and I thought ran pretty good at the Breeders' Cup. Look, she was just beat by some better horses who ran a really fast time that day. They went a mile in 1:34.2. So I'm not going to knock her for that. Came back, Wakeshu, one of my favorite horses, although I hate the name, able to air. That was one I really liked that day. And I thought that Austere ran well, but I thought she also needed the race just based on the way that she ran it. So I'm excited to see what she's able to do here second off the layoff. We saw a huge improvement as a two-year-old first to second race. I think we're going to see another jump forward here second off the layoff as a three-year-old. So I think it's all systems go for Austere, like the 10-1 price. We get that. Might be worth a win bet. The other must use for me, though, the horse I had in second was the one horse Poolside with Slim, fitting for this race induced channel. We got a Slim mention here. Look, you go back, you watch the Florida Oaks. That was another one where Wasiku Wakeshu, freaking name.
She's not in the Kentucky Derby, right?
Yeah, seriously, just killing me with that name. I know how to pronounce it, and I can't even pronounce it. I think Poolside with Slim has a very, very good chance of getting a pretty easy lead in this spot. Like, he's clearly going to go. I think the two Live in Magic is going to defer. You look at the other speed in this race, and you're looking at like the 7 Dozen Diamonds, but that speed's a little faulty to me. If you look, the one race where Dozen Diamonds went gate to wire over this Keeneland course, they went 49.25. I don't think they're going to be going that slow. And out after that, it's maybe Pounce, but Pounce is coming from the 10 post. Like, Pounce is not going to beat Poolside with Slim to that first turn. And I just don't see Saez going crazy on the two. Now, if Saez goes crazy on the two, it makes Poolside with Slim's life a little rougher. But we did see in that last race, Poolside with Slim sitting second from the one post and be able to then make a move and got beat by better horses late. But this is also a horse that's taken a step forward every single one of the starts. That was first time two turns, first time turf. I think Poolside with Slim eligible to be able to take a step forward here. So I think the one's got a decent shot going gate to wire here at 8-1.
I couldn't pull the trigger on her, but she, like I said at the start of this race, you can make a case for just about anybody, and drawing the rail is perfect for cutting back to a mile from a mile 16th, I think, is very much to her benefit as well. We'll see what she does. I think she's got a great chance to go gate to wire. I just couldn't quite put it on, put her on my ticket. Yeah. Poolside with Slim, where he's living that dad life, singing dad rap. I can never escape that. What is it about this? I can't escape the dad rap mentions.
It's catchy, man. It's catchy. Go check it out on YouTube.com. Dad rap, the music video out now.
I am not one of the five. I can't handle Saratoga Slim's midlife crisis. I just can't. It's like watching a fallen hero. It's just not what you like to see. Speaking of people we do like, though, I see Sylvia in the chat. She's excited that she can watch us live for once. I know she doesn't usually get to, but feeling sick at home. So hopefully you feel better, Sylvia. Hopefully we can give you some winners here. Another horse we agreed on, another horse at 10-1 is the 4 Gresham Goddess. And this is a really interesting filly because she was purchased for $95,000 by Windstar Farm. She debuts for Christophe Clément. She's dead on the board at 11-1, fights hard and wins by a nose. Out of that race, Windstar, a breeding operation, sells her privately, and she gets sent to Chad Brown. Chad Brown sees fit to put her straight into a grade two race for her first time facing winners, her second career start, and he convinces Pratt Daddy that it's a good idea to ride her. The speed figure is not great from that Tampa race. It's facing winners for the first time in a grade two where there's some really talented graded stakes winners. We're both using her. Why are we both using her, Mike?
Because she's in the race. I mean, it's really that simple. Like you outlined the case for why it's such a unique situation. Like you don't see a lot of horses go Clément to Brown. You don't see the private sale after that first race. And then Pratt's like, yeah, no, I'm good. Let's ride. Let's do this. Like the fact that you have all of these different aspects of this horse coming together made it very hard for me to pass, especially when you're throwing 10-1 up there. I was between the 4 and the 5 for my last horse in here. Not even gonna just like Kairu. Kai.
I think you got it. I think it's Kairu.
Kairu. I actually kind of like the name. Although like Kairu is, yeah, yeah. He spells it a little differently. There's a OU in there. Look. The fact that she shows up here tells you Chad Brown thinks she's ready to roll. He also, by the way, doesn't have another horse in here. And this is one of those races where you almost expect to have 2 to 3 Chad Brown horses because this is his wheelhouse, is these filly races, big days, big tracks on the turf. This is where you'd think you'd see 2 or 3 Browns. You only see one, and Pratt picks up the mount. To me, it's really, really interesting. The 5, like I said, was the horse I was between. But when you see 9-2 and 10-1, and I'm it's a coin flip to me. I'm taking the 10-1 over the 9-2 every single time. We've talked a bunch about Sherry DeVoe. I don't remember Irad ever riding for her. Like I was shocked to see Irad aboard, which was the reason I almost did end up using the 5 here, but I went between the 4 and the 5. And for me, I took the price here on the 4 versus taking the 5.
Yeah. You would have thought that he would have been the one to be riding Gresham Goddess. We both are passing on the 5, Kerry, and the 9-2 price is a big reason, but it's a tough spot to be making North American and routing debuts. She's only, you know, she did 5 furlongs and 6 furlongs on turf and then tried 7 furlongs on synthetic. And that didn't go well, but she is a great Group 3 winner overseas. But part of the problem with that Group 3 race is I think that everybody she faced was just kind of peaking. And I don't know if she's peaked as well. The two horses that finished 2nd and 3rd are 1 for 6 lifetime. They each won their debuts like Kairu did. And then didn't win again after that. Neither of them have won since. Sherry DeVoe, we both love her normally, but she's not known for putting Euros straight into the winner's circle first out. It's not to say that she won't do that or can't do that, but just not something that she's known for. And to take that short of a price, like where you were going with this, it's hard to swallow that. So we're going to both pass on her. Last one for me. I kept trying to tell myself not to do it. I'm going to use the 10 pounds at 3-1.
No.
She's two for two on turf, including a grade three at Gulfstream Park. Yeah. Over Life's Inaudible, which I'm very surprised Life's Inaudible is not in this race. You would have thought Pletcher and Rapoli would have wanted to send her here. But listen, she's got the wins on the page to say that she can do it. You say, okay, well, she's breaking from post 10. It's a short run to the first turn. Her first race on turf, she broke from post 11 going 7.5. That's like break and turn left. Like that's how quickly that turn hits you on the turf at Gulfstream. She won that one gate to wire. And then in the Here Comes the Bride, her first time facing stakes horses, blew the break, sat way off, was 6 lengths behind at one point, came flying 7 wide and got up and beat Life's Inaudible and Ozaro, who are both very talented horses, three-year-old fillies on the turf. So the biggest problem, she was 14 to 1, 9 to 1. Now she's 3 to 1. So, and this is by far the toughest field that she's going to face. But three wins from four starts, forgive the synthetic effort, and she fits very well here. But again, I know you. You're looking at that 3 to 1 price, and you're going, I want nothing to do with her here.
Yeah, I don't, especially because, like, the race two back, she makes the lead and wins. Okay, cool. Good job. Like, no knocks on that. The race last time out, I just don't – the numbers, I think, are wrong. To me, that's not a – like, she got a 90 buyer, right? Her time form was very good. I disagree with the numbers, and the reason is the 12 Crown Imperial got an 85 buyer for that race for running fourth, and Crown Imperial's never done anything near that. Like, not even close. So is this just, like, a career-best effort from Crown Imperial for running fourth when she faded down the stretch? Or was it the track that elevated those horses to run career-best numbers? And if you take away that number from Pounce, she should be 8-1 to 10-1 in this race. And I'm taking that number away because I think that race produced a faulty high buyer, which means that I think she should be triple the price that you're getting on Saturday. And that's why I can't use the 10 pounds. If she wins, congratulations. Like, you mentioned that field of eight. This is a bigger field. I don't think that you have as much speed as you did that day. I don't think she can make the lead. I think she's 2-3 wide if she breaks today. To me, between the post, the price, and the fact that I think you've got a faulty number, I just couldn't get to the 10.
Go back in the chat here. Our buddy JD Fox bringing up the 7 dozen diamonds, a must use for him. Again, 20 to 1. The horse is 2-for-2 in turf routes, exits a key dirt race. The only knock is Vicky Oliver off the layoff isn't an ideal angle. I would say saying it's not an ideal angle, I think, is putting it nicely. I think she'll factor into the pace early. She'll be kind of in that front running group. But after that, I don't know that she really can stay on it. We haven't seen her since she tried the Golden Rod and finished a fading fourth.
Yeah, I think this is one where I would stable up if Dozen Diamonds runs well, but sneaky. Like, not, you don't want her to run too good. You want her to run bad on paper, good on good with the eye test, so that you can stable her up and use her next time out on the turf going two turns. I think she probably needs one. You mentioned Oliver. She's not wonderful first off the layoff. I don't love Flo in these situations either. As a jockey who needs, like, this is a decision horse. You need to make multiple decisions during the race. They need to all be correct to win. Usually I'm not on Giroux horses when that's the case.
Michael Olson brings up, hard to justify your Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies turf winner. What happened to her? She's only had 5 works since the Breeders' Cup. So she's just started working at the beginning of March. They're bringing her along slowly. It's Bill Mott. So she was nominated here, as Myella says, just wasn't entered. I think that's the smart decision. Just it's Mott. He's going to be patient, take his time with her. So, but yeah. Shadi also brings up the 12 Crown Imperial. She loves John Ortiz, the trainer of Barbara Road, Bright Work. So, of course, that's why she'll Crown Imperial needs to get back to sprinting. That's my opinion on her. I think her best races were when she's going 5.5, 6.5 at Kentucky Downs. She's a good horse when she's sprinting. I understand that the best races right now for the 3-year-old fillies on turf are routing, just not the right spot for her.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, time form and buyer do not agree with you, since the last race was so good from Crown Imperial. I don't think that was good. That's why I can't use the 10 either. Anyway, that's my end of my rant. And congrats, buddy. I'm glad you're going to get to meet Barbara Road. I hope the two of you live happily ever after.
Yeah. Yeah. Shadi gets to finally meet Barbara Road. That's she meant pet him. She said, let him be pet by her. I can't make that work. And Michael is correct. It is Chad Brown. Just FYI is Bill Mott.
Yep.
Hard to justify. Chad Brown, come on, get a little more creative.
He's got Grecian Goddess. He doesn't need Hard to Justify here.
Actually, that's true. That should make you like Grecian Goddess even more then. Yeah, not that we didn't already like her, but yeah. All right, let's move on. Third leg of the late pick 5, Saturday, April 6th at Keeneland Race 8. It's the Grade 1 Madison Stakes. We got a field of 8 older fillies and mares sprinting that tricky, tricky 7 furlongs on the main track. Where are you going on top?
Give me the deuce. I'm going back to our old friend, Red Carpet Ready, who delivered for us in the Ford Gal at Gulfstream Park in February of last year. Getting her second off the layoff here. I thought she looked really good last time out at Gulfstream, going 6.5. You get Sayas back aboard. Biggest concern, she's kind of got a little fierceness in her. I mean, right now, like, not until later, she'll have a lot of fierceness in her. But right now, she's got a little fierceness in her, because you've got this very good race, then not as good of a race, then very good race, then not as good of a race. You see the parallel I'm making, Magic? Get your mind out of the gutter. Unfortunately, she ran a huge race last time. I hope that she can then run that same big race back. Fiercest would be proud of her if she could. So I like Red Carpet Ready here on top. I like the 7-2 price. I think she gets a very good stalking trip.
Didn't put her on top, but I did use her here. And I'm going to tell you up front, I chalked the F out in this race. I couldn't get past the top three horses. But Red Carpet Ready. She broke my heart pretty badly in the Devona Dale, but I loved her in the Forward Gal. Loved her in the 8 Bell. She got the win that day as well. I'm willing to forgive the victory ride because clearly something went wrong, right? We didn't see her for 245 days. And then she comes back off the break and Sias has the mountain. That was a really nice win. She beat Olivia Darling, who was exiting the win on Pegasus World Cup undercard. 4 wins, 5 starts at either 6.5 or 7 furlongs. And you see Vava's in here. We'll talk about her in a second. The 2-1 favorite on the morning line. Sias was Vava's rider up until the victory ride. He chose to stay on Red Carpet Ready and said, now, may have been the wrong decision in the moment because of what happened with Red Carpet Ready, and Vava had a good finishing third there. But the fact that Sias chose this horse over your morning line favorite tells me I like her a lot. Hopefully she continues to progress as a 4-year-old. She's out of a Street Sense mare. So that side of the breeding says things are good. And oh, by the way, Rusty Arnold and Luis Sias, 35% winners in the last year, including three times with this filly.
Yep, not bad stats at all. And like you said, like sometimes there's races that are just too bad to believe. That race 2 back falls under the too bad to believe. You kind of just cross it out even if you don't officially hear something went wrong or there were traffic trouble. When a horse who runs well runs that poorly, you kind of just have to say, okay, wasn't their day. I'm not going to hold that one against them. And hopefully other people will, so you get a little bit better of a price. Second horse for me was on the rail. This is the one price that I was interested in this race. Sterling Silver, the one horse. Albatroni sends it out. Castellano rides. There is so much speed. So much speed, as Voshan is mentioning in here. And it's not like good speed, which makes me even more concerned. The 4 horse is as cheap as you get. That horse is going to go, right? The 6 horse is super fast and a pretty good horse, but has to deal with the 4 horse. And then you have the 7 Vava, the 7 Big Pond, the 8 Vava, the 2 Red Carpet Ready, the 1 or 3 Hot and Sultry, who all possess some speed. It just feels like you're going to see horses hook up here and that the 4's only chance to win is to go. So the 4 100% goes, the 6 goes with it. You have 2 or 3 horses that try and stay within striking distance, which means they're going way too fast. And then all of a sudden, here comes Sterling Silver, who's got something left, closing from the clouds. I think the 1 has a big chance to win because of the setup, not necessarily because of the talent.
If you think that there's going to be a pace meltdown, this is absolutely the horse where you need to go, I think. Something weird, by the way, happened at Santa Anita. I see being brought up in the chat as well. They're about middle of the second race, going 2-turn mile on the dirt, and everybody pulled up in mid-stretch. Not sure what exactly happened with that, but hopefully everybody's okay. I see inquiry being posted now, so we'll keep you updated on that if you're watching live. I didn't use Sterling Silver, but I did have her on that ticket where she won at Tampa Bay Downs in that handicap race. She looked good, second off the layoff. You think she'd take a big step forward here as well. I just feel like she's a good underneath horse for the exotics, not someone I'm going to play to win here. Top pick for me, and you agreed on this horse, Vava Go Voom in this race. I love Vava. I love Vava so much. 7 furlong specialist, 3 wins in a second. She's hit the board in every single one-turn race since her debut. I almost initially thought I was going to single her. That's how much I love her. The layoff's the concern. I don't know what's going to happen to her off the layoff. I also... really, it's just the layoff. That's really what my concern is here. But you got Irad. We talked about in the last race, Irad riding for Street Devona. Like, that never happens. They're doing it 2 races in a row. So Vava, the 8 horse from off the pace, she loves that 7 for a long distance, Mike.
Yeah, and this is clearly one that DeVoe pointed to with the idea that she wanted Vava to be able to win this one. And I mentioned all the speed. If you have all the speed signed on, where do you want to be? You want to be sitting in that 8 post. It's a great draw going 7 furlongs with speed to your inside. Ortiz is going to be able to decide where he wants to be. Won't have any issues with horses backing up or traffic trouble. So the post favors Vava as well here. I did use Vava. I went 1-2-8 in this spot to get through. I wouldn't be shocked if Vava runs a real big race. I would be shocked if the 2 and 8 absolutely are banging heads coming down the stretch. It's a monster race from both of them.
Sounds like a quick San Diego update. It's a fan from Mati just said it's a no contest, as Sylvia is saying. Cash LA Surf, thanks for reporting this. Gio Franco tossed off the horse out of the gate and then turning for home. All the jocks pulled up. I'm going to guess that they couldn't get Gio off the ground or out of the way, and it was unsafe for them to keep going, which he was on the two flatter with Jules, your 8-5 second choice. I really hope he's okay. He's a good friend of mine, so I hope Gio is doing well, but we'll see how things progress. Third choice for me, I told you I was chalking out. I'm going to use the 6, Alva Star, and I was trying to beat her. I thought the 7 furlongs might be kind of what does her in. We saw the one time she went beyond 6. It was the Grade 2 Raven run. And watching that replay, I was like, man, that she had the lead. She had it won, and at the 8th pole, she just coughed it right up. Like, that 8th pole hit her right between the eyes. But she takes the 3-month layoff. She comes back in the mud at Oaklawn Park, ends up winning the stakes race there. If speed holds, and we've seen, I'm not saying that Keeneland's going to be souped up with speed, but if speed is doing really well at Keeneland, I think she outbreaks everybody, and then they're just all running for second at that point. So I'm going to use her off the chance that it could go gate to wire here. If you're thinking about, if you're playing this and you're thinking, like, I don't want to use the three shortest prices here, leave Alva Star off, go 2-8 here, maybe throw in Mike's 1. But for me, if she breaks on top and has the early lead, it's going to be hard for Alva Star to really lose unless it's, you know, the 7 furlong thing. And then we'll find out, right? We'll find out in the stretch if it's 7 furlongs or not. But she's never finished worse than second in 7 lifetime starts. So she makes my ticket.
Yeah, if the 4 scratches, she becomes a lot bigger of a threat as well. We'll see what happens there. The 4 is the one horse that can really push her early. And I see no world where the 4 doesn't want to go. Right, because you want, your advantage here is inside speed. That's what you got if you're the 4. You're 30-1. You're a huge price. You've just got to go. If you're going to try and take this to the 6, so if the 4 ends up not in the race, the 6 gets upgraded big time to me. I still think the 8 and the 2 are the better two horses, but the 6 would then have a pretty significant pace edge on the field.
Michael Olson, he's actually for a few days now been talking about the 7 Big Pond who's shipping in from California for Tim Yak Team. Flavian Pratt is going to hop aboard here. Michael is with us on the 2 and the 8, but he also loves the 7. I agree that 20-1 is bad. I wouldn't say bad in all capital letters like that, because there's a lot of very talented horses in here, and she's a Cal bred. But, you know, she was a nose away from winning the Grade 1 La Brea, possibly, in my opinion, one of the lesser talented runnings of that race. But she rebounded to beat older horses last out at Cal bred stakes race. Got the edge on Daddy's Ruby there. Beat several nice, talented California sprinters, but they're all California-bred sprinters, and this is a huge, huge step up from what she's facing.
If you've watched this show for the last 3 years, you know my opinion on California fillies. I mean, like, the horses, not great. We've seen them let you down consistently in big races when they travel all over the place, and so it's one of those horses that would have to beat me for me to really respect. Yakteen and Prep, good connections, price is right. So if you like the horse, I'm not saying don't play it. But for me, it's tough when you have the best fillies on the East Coast taking on the best fillies on the West Coast. And we've seen year after year after year, the West Coast cannot compete when this happens. That to me is the biggest issue, is that you just haven't seen any consistency from West Coast fillies when they travel and face East Coast fillies. And when East Coast fillies go West, they win. And so you kind of have a baseline that's already set from the dirt fillies.
Yeah, I want to say that La Brea, I think only, was it Brissette and Cox were the only shippers. Cox had Howell. She just was a complete no-show, and I think she's done racing now. And the Brissette's horse was not anyone of note. So it wasn't like the A-team from the East Coast of three-year-old fillies went over there for the La Brea Stakes. So, but to his credit, Michael says she ran a big Sheets number. So at least if you're a Sheets player, you've got to like her going that way. Penultimate leg of the Keeneland Lane Pick 5, Saturday, April 6th. I already went right past it. Race number 9, it's the Grade 2 Shakertown Stakes. We got a field of 12 older males, plus one also eligible, sprinting 5.5 furlongs on the turf. And this is just me off of what my brain thinks is correct. But I feel like this is a race you nail every single year. Is this and then the Woodford in the fall. Like these turf sprints at Keeneland for the older males, you are like right on them. So who you got on top?
I have been very fortunate in the Keeneland turf sprints. They made up some nice prizes for me. Just real quick, Ray Pollock on Twitter. Second race at Santa Anita declared no contest after Franco was thrown at the start aboard flatter with Jules. Stewart's halted the race since Franco was still down near the finish line while they were on the backside. Frank Miramati reported Franco did get up before the horses turned for home. So sounds like he is okay in that front. Give me the six. Arzak. People are asking, like, what best bet of the weekend? Arzak might be my best bet of the weekend. I think this horse is absolutely loaded in this spot. If you go back, two back, one at Keeneland in the Woodford, the grade two, I thought was really impressive in that race. Came back in the Breeders' Cup sprint. Ran sneaky good. There was a ton of trip trouble for a lot of different horses toward the end of that race, and Arzak was one of the ones that kind of got caught up in the churn, if you will. So for me, Arzak top pick here. I like the fact that Trombetta is coming back over course. This horse clearly likes going one for one over it, a distance this horse clearly likes. And oh, by the way, Irad Ortiz decides to pick up the mount. Like, it was an interesting move there. These two teamed up 16 times the last 2 years. They're 4 for 16. Pretty good there as well. I've ridden him once before. That was in a grade three at Belmont, but the turf was yielding. So I'm almost willing to give a pass there, as Arzak has run pretty much on just firm turf. So give me the six, Arzak on top. Although I did like the four, Beer Can Man, quite a bit in this spot too. And this is why I couldn't shorten up here. I think Beer Can Man runs big. I always talk about when D'Amato ships to the Midwest, watch out. Beer Can Man has run well in the Midwest before. This is a horse that ships well. I thought, again, ran an okay Breeders' Cup sprint, especially considering everything that happened, breaking from the 12 post, was steadied in the stretch, and ran well in the Woodford as well, and was just kind of had a rough trip there coming out of the 11 post and couldn't get it done. Fun fact, you don't want to break outside the 8 if you are running at Keeneland in turf sprints. It's very difficult to win outside the 8 post.
That doesn't bode well for one of my picks that I'll talk about. Not my top pick, so maybe I can make a better case for it. Listen, Beer Can Man, I think, is great to use underneath. It just, when it's a spot like this, I don't see him getting the win. But you've got to love that Pratt's riding for D'Amato. You've got to love that D'Amato's shipping to Keeneland. I know that's an angle that you like as well. He is 33% winners from 12 starts in the last year at Keeneland, with 50% of them hitting the board. You could argue this horse, you know, if he hadn't been coming off of such a long ass layoff and then the allowance race at Keeneland last year, he definitely would have been right there in the mix, if not outright winning. So I'm going to pass on him because he's coming off of another longer layoff here, 154 days. But that was over a year layoff. That was a year and 2 months that he was trying to overcome. This time we just haven't seen him since the Breeders' Cup. And he is a cool horse with a cool name. We always like the Beer Can Man. Next up for me, I've seen a couple people bring him up. Max Witten mentions it. Mischief Magic. Here we go. Give me Mischief Magic. If you remember him, Chris Maiello, he's been here before. He's been at this track over this exact course and setup before. He was the first Euro to ever win the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint, a race that was dominated by American horses until, well, recently. And then Big Evs, also hat tip to you. Love that horse. But Mischief Magic, back-to-back solid turf sprint efforts in the Middle East. He's 4 years old, still doing very strong, even though he had that big grade one win as a two-year-old. I think he fits very well. I understand if you don't want to use him because he's 7-2. He's been in, he was in UAE, he was in Saudi Arabia, he was in England, and now he's here. It's Appleby, man. It's going to be so hard for me to pass up on an Appleby whenever it ships to America. So I'm using number three, Mischief Magic.
Yeah, I used the three as well. So I ended up 3, 4, 6 here in this spot. You mentioned that Keeneland race. That was kind of a collapse race and was able to take advantage of it. You've got a ton of speed in here. We'll see if this race falls apart as well. I wish that Buick came over. I would be more confident in if Buick can ship. But we don't have Buick. Gaffleone ends up taking them out. But this is the only Appleby that's showing up. Well, I guess there's a couple tomorrow or Saturday as well. But I'm sorry, there's a couple tomorrow as well. So you've got a couple.
Oh, yeah, he's in a group.
You have a couple Applebees over the weekend. So I am a little surprised Buick didn't come over. But, man, you go back and watch Mischief Magic win that Breeders' Cup race. You're like, nope, this horse has a killer turn of foot, can handle the U.S. surfaces. I like the post position of the three. It's going to set up well to be able to close. Going to need to make a trip out because you're going to have to be able to find your way to the front. But you do have enough speed in here where I think it sets up for someone to come off the pace.
Buick is staying to ride at the all-weather surface at Kempton. He's got a filly on Saturday named Devoted Queen that you can get a 4-9 bet on right now. That's how heavily favored she is. Maybe he just wanted to stay for a sure thing. I don't know. I don't blame him. I would assume we see him back, though, I believe next weekend. Master of the Seas, your Breeders' Cup Mile winner, is back. He's going to be in the Maker's Mark Mile. Appleby's got a whole contingent he brought to Keeneland, so that's super exciting. We both agree on the three and the six here. I also use the number two, so Sua Summer at 12-1. I got a couple long shots I'm using here. 7 turf sprints for this horse at 5 or 5.5 furlongs. 4 wins, 2 seconds, and 1/3. The third came as a maiden. So after breaking the maiden, 4 wins, 2 seconds, and 6 starts at the distances. Last two starts, Both of them, he finished ahead of Minnesota Ready. We already talked about him. He's the favorite in the Grade 3 Commonwealth that kicks off this sequence. I think the last race for Sosua Summers arguably is best. He really seems to be, as a five-year-old now, blossoming very well. Bill Mott's taking very good care of him. Luis Saez is going to ride him. So for a longer shot, I like Sosua Summer under here.
I looked at Sosua Summer for a while. I just couldn't get there. The two races of Fairgrounds I thought were the better two races. And like, you look at the Saratoga races, they're okay. But it kind of feels like Sosua Summer is just a cut below. You know what I mean? Like, we would need a career best effort to be able to pop up and win. But at 12-1, it's not the wrong price. And the horse seems to be in form now. You get Saez, it's Mott. So won't talk you off it. But for me, it was a pass.
And then the last one for me, I mentioned, you said it's hard to win outside post 8 here. And I said, well, that doesn't bode well for the number 10 hour shot for John Terranova. But getting a good price, 10-1 on this horse, and is the last one on my ticket. This is just a really consistent turf sprinter. He can win on the front end like he did over this exact course and distance last year's Keeneland April meet. He also wins from off the pace. He did that at Pimlico in the past. And he was within two lengths of our top pick in here, Arzak, previously. So I'm going to use him, but it sounds like he might need a couple of scratches to help his chances based off what you're saying with his post.
Yeah, I mean, the post isn't the best. The 10 was the first horse off for me. So if I went five deep here, so I went two in the must use, one the next up. There were two deep ticket horses. One of them was the 10. The other was our old friend, the 8 horse Front Run the Fed. Everybody loves Front Run the Fed, man. Everybody loves her. Yeah, we've talked about Front Run of the Fed. I personally have fallen in love with Front Run of the Fed. I don't know how many times I bet this horse. I think I've probably used it 5 or 6 times. Just remember, though, this horse has won at 17-1 for us. What was the other? There was another time this horse won for us. Or 12-1. I'm sorry. 12-1 for us at Keeneland, going 5.5. Horse loves the racetrack magic.
Yeah, he does.
Front Run the Fed will be used again, don't worry, but not in this spot. I think this is a little too big of an ask for the 8. The 10, I agree with you. The 10, I think, does have a decent shot. I don't love the post, but our shot ran very close to Arzak last year. And if the trip is right, then I wouldn't be shocked if our shot gets into the winner's circle. Like I said, was the fourth horse on, and I only went 3 deep here.
I'm just glad you brought up He Who Shall Not Be Named so that I didn't have to. But yeah, I saw the chat talking all about it.
But is Front Run the Fed your Voldemort?
Moving on, the fifth and final leg of the late pick 5 at Keeneland on Saturday. Late pick 5, race 10 on April 6th. It's the grade 1 Toyota Bluegrass Stakes. I don't want to say with that accent, but we've got a field of 11 3-year-old colts going a mile and an eighth on the dirt. I've got a single in here, but I'll throw it to you first. Who got on top?
Man, I hate this race so much. I don't like this race even a little bit. Give me the 11 Encino on top. I'm gonna go to the Turfway or the Turf Paradise horse. No, Turfway Park, not the other one. Look, I'm not a Dornock guy. I'm not a Sierra Leone guy. And so for me, I was never picking either of those two horses in this race. At 3-1 and 2-1, I think they're both wildly undervalued. Dornock, like, I thought looked terrible last race. I realize he won, but I thought he did not look good. The fact that Dornock beat Sierra Leone 2 back. And by the way, Sierra Leone has only been good on a muddy track. We haven't seen him run on a fast track yet. So we'll see what happens if we have fast dirt, by the way. People kind of forget to mention that. So I'm not playing him at 2-1 and 3-1, which means that I'm price hunting here. I only went 2 deep. I'm going to take 2 big shots. The first one's going to be Encino here. Brad Cox sends this horse out. Last time we saw him was a nice win in the Battaglia. I thought that was a tough post to overcome going a mile and 16th, draws the 10 out of 11, does a very good job to be able to just run everybody down late. The time I thought was good as well. So no knocks there. This is a horse Nyquist out of a Bernardini mare. Dirt shouldn't be a problem. Distance shouldn't be a problem. And oh, by the way, Pratt just randomly decides to pick up the mount here for Brad Cox. They do team up quite often, 111 times the last 2 years, clicking off at 28%, pretty good. So when Pratt is on a Cox horse, you kind of have to watch out. Encino, I think, is just going to take another step forward here. And when you look numbers-wise, the Battaglia is pretty much what Sierra Leone ran in the Risen Star, yet one is being hyped through the moon, and the other one no one is paying attention to. So I'm going to put the 11 Encino on top here in this spot.
He is our fantasy hopes and dreams, along with Honor Marie. We picked him up after he won the John Battaglia Stakes. And when they made the announcement that they were going to not do the Jeff Ruby last week, but instead target the Grade 1 Bluegrass, a horse that's only ever run on the synthetic course at Turfway Park. I almost said Turf Paradise. Thank you, Mike. They said, no, we're going to put them on dirt in the grade one bluegrass, which is going to be, as you mentioned, a rematch between Dornoch and Sierra Leone. Yeah, this is exciting. Not my single, but it is my second choice in this race. It's weird that he started on synthetic because he's by a Kentucky Derby winner in Nyquist. His damn glittering jewel is a half to a horse named Street Sense, who was the first Breeders' Cup juvenile champion to win the Kentucky Derby. Both of those races run on dirt. He's got a dirt pedigree all over the place. The speed figures, no matter which one you use, are improving for him. I know that the last race in the Battaglia was a huge one. And I'm not worried about the post because his debut race at Turfway Park, he was almost last and rallied to get second. And that's not an easy thing to do for a horse debuting. Went gate to wire to break the maiden. The Battaglia, back in the 10 post. Doesn't matter. The horse can handle it. So he's going to be in the 11 post here. I did see Max bring up that there was rumors of Encino scratching and doing the Lexington next week. If you can elaborate where you heard those, I just looked on Twitter. The only person I saw mention that was Dennis Trusty, a good friend of the show. No offense, Dennis, but if Dennis is the only one saying this, and it's not just Dennis, one person is just saying it, nobody else. I don't know where that's, but if you saw maybe a DRF article, Bloodhorse, TDN, please let me know. I'd love to see that information there. Just one post to Encino's Insight is my single. That's the 10 Sierra Leone. And I'm going to correct you. We have seen this horse do well in a fast track. His debut race, where he came from well off of it in a field of seven, won by a length and a quarter going a one-turn mile. This horse has, just like how Fierceness seems to have the most raw talent and speed of any three-year-old, nobody in this crop has a better turn of foot than Sierra Leone. He loves chasing down a big field. He's a nose away in the Remsen, which was, you said it before when we were covering the Fountain of Youth with Dornoch, heavily speed favoring that day, and he still was almost able to overcome that. I think Sierra Leone is the best horse in this race, so I'm going to single him here, and I'll let the other horses try and beat me. If it's Encino, I'll at least be happy for fantasy purposes, but to me, Sierra Leone just stands out.
Yeah, I get it. I guess, and I'm just double checking my facts here before I say this, but you mentioned that like Sierra Leone has this killer turn of foot. Sierra Leone has never run a 12-second final quarter in his career. It's all like 12 and a half, almost 13. Like, he's not that fast, which to me is one of those things where it's like, well, are we sure it's not the horses he's running against that are like, because remember Track Phantom? Remember what happened in the Louisiana Derby?
Yep.
But just back it on up, baby. That's all Track Phantom was doing down the stretch. And that's the horse that he ran down. So am I supposed to think that Sierra Leone has a devastating turn of foot, or Track Phantom slows down later in races? It kind of leads me to think Track Phantom slows down later in races. And then we go to the race that he lost. It is inexcusable to allow Dornoch to re-rally on you. Like, just absolutely inexcusable. When he gets by, and then, like, it should have been over if you're a fast horse with a devastating turn of foot. I never saw anyone re-rally on Zenyatta. That was a fast horse with a devastating turn of foot. This is not that same style of horse. Look, Sierra Leone, I have in third in the race, I think is exponentially more likely to win than Dornoch. But I just, I can't with the price. I can't with the price. To me, it's just, these two should not be 2-1 and 3-1 in this race. I cannot get there. So now, yes, this is an older horse. We're second off the layoff. Maybe something changes. That first race, by the way,
he's got the blinkers on. He's much better with blinkers.
Okay. We'll see. But then on top of it, this is also a dead closer on a mile and 16th short stretch, which favors speed. Like,
so, mile and an eighth, normal stretch.
Okay. Fine. Mile and eighth. The track still is speed favoring. I think you'll agree with me there. So I don't know. To me, it's just like, I can't get it, the 2-1 price. I think Sierra Leone gets bet down. From everything I've heard, Dornoch is the horse that people are not going to be into. So that's going to be the one that floats up of these two. So I can't with Sierra Leone. I am going to go too deep, and I can't believe this is the second horse I'm using. Like, I was shocked when I actually ended up on this horse. Give me the two horse, BU, for Todd Pletcher, Ired Ortiz, 8-1 on the morning line. I went back. As I was like, so again, like I said, I don't love this race because I hate the two favorites, which usually means I love a race, but I don't really love anybody else in the race either, which makes it a little more difficult. I went back and watched all of BU's races, and the debut was very good. The horse goes to the hopeful. There, that was a just devastating pace. We saw Natella Fellow win that race. That was a mess. Okay, not going to worry about it. The American Pharaoh, Still a maiden, goes into a grade one American Pharoah, gets beat by Wind Me Up, and runs okay, but not great. But again, I can make an excuse for that. Jumps into the maiden special weight. That's the one you can't make an excuse for, the November 12th race. Comes back in a maiden special weight, faces Conquest Warrior, completely feels like he needs a race. By the way, broke out of the 10 post, was seven wide on the first turn, six wide on the second turn. So all the excuses. And then just puts it all together last race. And this was a horse that Pletcher was high on last fall. This is a horse that the barn has been high on since last fall. It feels like the light bulb turned on. And like I said, I don't love anybody in this race. I'll take the light bulb horse here at 8-1.
Rob is correct. He's been working with Fierceness a lot. So if you're the work partner of the most raw talented horse in the barn, forget about running style and pace setup, but Fierceness, the most talented three-year-old I think we've seen all year. I get it. Not for me. I feel like his best races have been at one turn, and I'll ask him to go 9-4, which is weird. By curling out of a congrats mirror.
Yeah.
It should want two turns.
Yeah. Two turns shouldn't be a problem. This is literally just the light bulb angle. That the horse figured it out and second start as a 3-year-old, and that it took that long because they've always been a talented horse. Everyone's always thought this horse had a ton of talent. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you're working with Fierceness just kind of proves the fact they always think this, they've always thought this horse has a ton of talent. We'll see if this is the day to put it together.
We'll see, by the way, if one horse will make it. So his debut race is Saratoga. Let me read off who was in that. Oh, Just Steal wins. Just Steel is in the Kentucky Derby. BU was second by a nose, was the 3-2 favorite. Locked was third, future grade one winner Locked. Domestic Product, who's in the Kentucky Derby, he was fifth. Holy shit, Saratoga was like, and here's the stars coming on out. So for him to be second by a nose on debut is pretty impressive. Just, I'm going to let him beat me here, but you did lay out a good case for him.
Yeah, I mean, like again, I don't like Just the Touch the Six. I don't like the 4 Doorknock. I don't like the 10 Sierra Leone. You kind of end up with some of these horses, and like I can't get on Top Connor. I like after the Tampa Bay Derby was his chance. I'm not going to use him here. And all of a sudden, you're just kind of left with the 5 Good Money and the 2 BU as the possible horses that have a shot. And to me, obviously outside of Encina, who I legitimately do like in this race and think runs a pretty good race here, and between 2 and 5 for me it was the 2. So ended up 211 here to close it out in what will be a minimum $5,000 pick five because of this closing leg, if I can hit this sucker.
I totally forgot when we were talking about Sierra Leone. Here's a fact for you about Chad Brown with the bluegrass. And another reason I like Sierra Leone, although he's got 3 entered, so this kind of is going to end up getting diluted. But if you think Brad Cox likes to send his best 3-year-old to the bluegrass, Chad Brown has had 6 horses that he's entered in this race total since 2016. So 8 runnings. Those 6 horses, Zandon, Good Magic, Blazing Sevens, Highly Motivated, who almost beat Essential Quality, Practical Joke, and My Man Sam, who I'd completely forgotten about. 6 entries in this race, 2 wins, 3 seconds near misses, and then a 3rd. Chad Brown does not mess around when it comes to the bluegrass. Now, it was reported later that when he had Top Connor and Good Money entered in here, it was because he didn't think they would get into the wood, which is a full field there. So I can kind of understand that. But another thing that I love, I just couldn't believe that. I was looking at Chad Brown's, I looked at every single race, and if he didn't hit the top 3, it's because he didn't have a horse entered in this race. That's pretty damn impressive.
It is. He's got 3 in here, though. And I do think this is an interesting question from Sylvia, because it definitely came into my mind when I was handicapping it. Are the 1 and the 5 in here as rabbits to the 4?
The one, yeah.
I don't think it's a dead rabbit, because he was in the Tampa Bay Derby. And I thought ran pretty well in the Tampa Bay Derby, considering it was first effort.
Yeah, he was right there.
But, yeah. Man, I do think the 1 presses. I don't think they're in here just to be rabbits, though. I do think that Brown thinks there is at least a puncher's chance that they can win the race. I'm sorry, the 5 was the one that was in there. The 1, I think, does have some speed. I think the 1 goes.
Yeah. Real quick, and we'll get out of here. Bree has brought up Seize the Gray multiple times. I don't want to ignore Bree's pick of Seize the Gray. I would like him a lot better if he was waiting one more week and went to the Lexington Stakes. Here, this is a 2-week turnaround from a good 3rd in the Jeff Ruby. But he missed by second by a head there. But I don't know if this is too short and too much of a class hike for him for what he's been facing for me to back him in this race.
Yeah, I don't really bet Dwayne Lucas in these races. That's pretty much my long and short of the handicap on whether or not I think he could clunk up the super. Like that's kind of the ceiling for me with Seize the Gray, though. And maybe, you know, maybe if Dornock doesn't run well, the two Chad Browns aren't good, BU isn't that great, and it's Encino and Sierra Leone up top. Yeah, then he could get third, something like that. But to me, it would take a couple other horses not showing up for him to hit the try.
Bree, where is a little bit of a delay? Bree, right when I brought him up, said, no love for Seize the Gray? No, but we at least talked about it for you about that.
we'll do that one. Any Just a Touch love?
Oh, not at 7-2, Mike. No way. Okay, he had a really nice win at 6 furlongs, and then he shipped to a nasty track at Aqueduct, and he rallied for a second despite a super wide trip. But he didn't look like Flo was pumping on him through the turn and into the stretch there. Like, it wasn't a great look. I feel like he's bested about a mile on the 16th, and when you're asking me to take him at 7-2, third choice in this field, that's way too much for him.
It feels a little like a little Timberlakey, doesn't it? Yes. Like a horse that wants one turn, that would be a very good miler, but we're not so sure if we're going two turns, specifically a mile and eighth. I think another horse that's probably part of the pace setup here. I do think there's quite a bit of speed in this race as well. I think this sets up for someone to come off if this is a positive for your Sierra Leone call.
Let's get a 10-11 dead heat at the wire. That's what we want to see here. That's going to do it for this episode of the Magic Mike Show. Thanks for joining Mike and I to talk about Keeneland Late Pick 5 Saturday, April 6th. It's races 6 through 10. There is a get-out race afterwards if you want to play that one. I had Masterpiece pretty much as a single, so that's what I thought about that race. It's pretty nasty. If Masterpiece is going to be a single for the podcast listeners, we'll list out our picks one last time. If you're watching the video, take a look down below. I'm going to start off for 50 cents. I'll go 2-4-7 with 3-4-6-9-10 with 2-6-8. With 2-3-6-10, single the 10 in the last for $90, Mr. Samich.
I'm going to go for a banger here. I'm going to play 50-cent ticket, go 2-6 with 1-4-6-9 with 1-2-8 with 3-4-6 with 2-11. That'll cost you $72.50.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Really appreciate it. Remember, with Keeneland, things get really crazy. You only need to connect a couple of times at Keeneland to really make some money. So be careful with your bets, but have fun. Enjoy it. It's such a beautiful track and a wonderful meet. So many stars. We were not going to see stars together like this again until Saratoga. So enjoy it while you can. Head over to racingdudes.com. We've got free picks for every race, every track, every day across the country. We also have the Bluegrass Stakes betting Bible. It's the finishing touch. I don't think it's out yet. The finishing touches are probably still being worked on. I know Aaron and Jared traveling to Lexington today. So if you're going to be at the track this weekend, let the guys know. They'll be there. It'd be great to meet up. Let them know and find them on Twitter at @racing_dudes. I'm at Curtis Kellowart. He is at SummerBomb18. Number one, number eight. And if you're playing college basketball or betting sports of any kind, make sure you follow Mike for VSIN. Real quick, what's going on with the VSIN network this weekend?
Be on Sharp Money tomorrow, 2 to 3 Pacific, then hosting The Handle, 9 to noon on Saturday and Sunday, talking everything Final Four, some of the NFL moves, as well as NHL and NBA playoffs. And, of course, we got Major League Baseball back in full swing as well, so a lot going on over there. I do want to shout it out here. Thank you very much to the chat today. You guys were awesome. Very live. Yes. Love all the comments. Love all the questions. So appreciate you guys joining us for a little bit earlier of a live show. Really excited the swing of things that we're in now. We saw it last week with the Florida Derby, everything going on. This weekend, another phenomenal racing weekend. We've got Aqueduct. We've got we've got Keeneland. We've got Santa Anita. We've got some major preps. It's going to be a blast this weekend as well. So thank you, everybody, for joining us.
We will be back next week to talk about everything that happened and then get you ready. It's after this. It's going to be Kentucky Derby until the Kentucky Derby itself. So until next time, I'm Magic.
And I'm Mike.
Good luck this weekend.
The Magic Mike Show, where you hear the experts speak. The Magic Mike Show. Tune into the show every week. The Magic Mike Show. You can trust the show is the bomb because it's being brought to you by RacingDudes.com.